Pear, are you drinking red wine?
That
Right
gonna be
as
the start of the
I was about to
show.
start, I just see a
Ooh,
little red wine come in. Wow,
wine
I love that, Perry. Well, without further
night.
ado, we are going to get into the seventh edition of the Forward Pass podcast. Welcome, everybody. We've got Sam Perry on a little wine night. We've got Caleb Archer in Macon, Georgia. We've got Luke Duska in Elon, North Carolina. I am in Indiana, Pennsylvania. Welcome to the first ever Wednesday edition of the Forward Pass Pod. Our recap segment of week three went pretty long, so we are going to do a separate week four preview. We've got a bunch of good games on the slate. Nothing too crazy, but we've got some awesome games that I'm excited for. No, I am no more excited for any game than the Texas Tech Red Raiders going to the Utah Utes playing at 10 a.m. Mountain Time. The Mormons will just be arriving from church. It is going to be a ruckus environment from the Utes. And I can't wait to watch it. So without further ado, we are going to get that game covered. Take it away.
Absolutely. First off, great game. Hilarious that it's going to be a 10 a.m. Mountain Time start. That means these players can be getting up bright and early at about 4 or 5 a.m. at the latest to get prepared for this one. Going to be a rowdy atmosphere in Rice-Eccles Stadium. Utah's home crowd is probably one of the more underrated in America. That stadium always has some weird stuff happening in it when there's a big crowd. Like last year, the BYU game, they could have won. USC a few years ago with Caleb Williams when they knocked him off, they had a insane performance. This is going to be an awesome environment for them, first off. So to start with Texas Tech, the away team, you're looking at Texas Tech. It's kind of the same old for Texas Tech. You start the season with about 2 to 3 cupcakes where you beat up on the inferior opponents by about 70 or 80, and then you get into conference play, and unfortunately, they're not able to move those 80 points they scored against them in order to like transfer some over when you're going to need them in a game like this. So that's unfortunate for them. But they have definitely gotten a lot better in, I believe, year 4 or 5 of Joey McGuire, probably even more at this point. Offense is going to be very dynamic with Bremen Morton at the helm. Good rushing attack, good weapons. They got hurt by the running back actually getting hurt preseason. I forget what the injury was, but he got ruled out and he's out the entire season. But it seems like their running backs have picked up the slack there. When you look at Utah, I mean, what's not to like about him? Biased US, or Utah homer here. Devin Dampier, just efficient is all. I mean, just
Over
special
70%
stuff.
completion.
Yeah.
Can't make that up.
73% completion, 7 touchdowns, 0 interceptions on the season. Just an insane performance from him to start the season. You got a great offensive line, probably one of the best in America when you actually look at it and not just look at the brand. Or look at what conference they're in. This is one of the best talent-wise offensive lines in America. Defense is always going to be good with Morgan Scalley. They run a little 4-2-5. We talked about it on the pod before week one. We said it was going to give Nico fits. Shockingly, it did, but sarcastic because not shocking at all. So this is going to be an awesome game. It's really going to see how Texas Tech can actually scale up this year to higher competition and not just beating up on these low-ranked teams like they have in years past. I personally think that Utah will be able to use their home crowd to their advantage and also physically impose their will at the lines of scrimmage. I think they have a clear advantage in both of those. And I think their defense will be able to slow down Texas Tech's high octane, fairly fast-paced offense, kind of an air raid style. And I think they'll be able to sneak out a victory here, which I think that it's going to be pretty close. And I think Utah is going to end up pulling away because Texas Tech's going to commit some turnovers while trying to force it late. So give me Utah here.
Duska, why don't you give your thoughts?
Sure. it's kind of hard to get a good feel for this game. I think there's a lot of unproven on the Texas Tech end just because of how transfer laden the roster is. Utah looks supremely physical in their few games they played so far, but like Arch mentioned, they haven't really played any competition that warrants being super confident in their ability to scale up that level of physicality. So it's going to be a big test. A lot of questions be answered on both sides. And like I said, hard to get a good feel, but I did have Texas Tech in the Big 12 championship game preseason. I also had them making the playoff as a sneaky second Big 12 team getting in. I love watching this Utah team. Spencer Fano, right tackle, is probably a day one guy. Super fun to watch. But I'm going to ride with my preseason selection in this one and go with the Red Raiders and friend of the pod, John Carlos Miller the second.
Yeah, I see a lot of similarities in this one with the Illinois Indiana game. It's kind of tough to get a read on some of these early conference play games when neither team has really played anyone of substance. That being said, I do think that Dampier is going to be the X factor in this game, and I'm going to take Utah at home. I will take them to cover the 3.5. I just think that their overall physicality is going to outmatch Texas Tech, and they will be put out.
Yeah, I'm with you, Sam. I think the world finds out who Devin Dampier is this weekend, and I think the Utes win in a close one. I do think Texas Tech, very explosive, very talent laden, but I do have the Utes. And with that, we are going to move on to the next game we preview, which is the Auburn Oklahoma game. Now, this game, you've got Jackson Dart, I mean, not Jackson Dart, Jackson Arnold returning to Oklahoma after a failed 2024 season, a 2025 season where he's looked really good in the run game. The pass game has been a little inefficient, but the Oklahoma Sooners have a huge win against a real team. And Auburn also has a huge win against a real team. Auburn beat Baylor, Oklahoma beat Michigan, and I'm excited to see what the pod has to say about this game.
Yeah, I listed this one as the true running back off. I think Battier was he was definitely a weapon in the run game against Michigan. Didn't need to carry the load as much against that Temple team they played last week. So I'm thinking he's going to be a little more fresh going into this one. But there were serious questions surrounding the OU ground game at the end of last year, I'd say, and then going into this year too. I don't think that those questions have necessarily been answered. Mateer definitely takes a little pressure off of the run game just with his ability to use his legs to his advantage. But the vertical passing game against Michigan was definitely there, and they were pretty efficient on third down. So I'd expect that trend to continue against this Auburn team because they struggled a bit defending the pass against Baylor when they played them. So we'll have to see about that. But I think overall, Brent Venables and Co. They're going to find a way to slow down the rushing attack of Auburn. They're going to force Jackson Arnold into more third and throw situations, which he's very unproven so far this year. And they've really kind of struggled in the passing game. So that's definitely a big question. I think Venables will find a way to kind of stress that offense more and not allow them to run the ball as well. So this plays into Oklahoma's favor. Just look at how much Bryce Underwood struggled in those situations in that Michigan game. And the Auburn defense, like I said, they're pretty vulnerable through the air. Soy Robertson absolutely shredded them. So I'm going to take the Sooners here to win and to cover.
I like that, Luke. I'm in complete alignment. I also think John Mateer might be significantly better than Jackson Arnold, and that could prove to be huge in this game.
Yeah, I agree. I think Oklahoma definitely has the edge in this game, basically, or solely because I think this is a similar matchup that they had against Michigan, and that their Auburn's going to heavily rely on the run. What I'm excited to see, though, is how Auburn's going to utilize the receivers, because so far they didn't really need to do that against Baylor, and how they were able to just lean on them throughout the game. But I do expect Venables to implement a similar game plan that they had against Michigan and kind of stifle Arnold and confuse him. And I expect them to try to turn him into just a full passer in this game, and kind of one of those seeds to believe it, like, please beat us through the air type games. I do not think Arnold's going to be able to do that. I don't think Auburn is going to be able to match Oklahoma's physicality, especially on Oklahoma's D-line. So I'm going to take Oklahoma to win and cover here behind the home environment, and they just are going to continue to roll as they get closer to the Red River Shootout here in a couple weeks.
Well, I guess I'm going to be the devil's advocate here. I am picking Auburn to win this game.
Ooh.
And I pick it, I'm thinking it from a few reasons. So I just think Michigan, the way that Oklahoma was able to stop Michigan's ground game was because they didn't really have to focus too much on Michigan's weapons and also their quarterback. And I think Auburn here is going to be able to stress them downfield and vertically more with a proven receiver room that is much better than Samaj Morgan and Co. that Michigan had. I think that Cam Coleman, Eric
Eric
Singleton,
Singleton Jr.
Eric
Yeah.
Singleton. For some reason, I keep wanting to call him Malachi Singleton. I don't know who that is.
It's Malachi Tony. That's a kid on Miami.
That's right. Yeah. So I think their passing attacks will be able to stretch them a little more, and it's going to make them stay more honest to the pass instead of just keying on the run all the time. And I think Arnold actually will come through with his arm. I cannot believe I'm saying that, but I just have a sneaky suspicion here, and I think that Oklahoma hasn't really played anything that's like Auburn's offense. I don't think Auburn's played anything like Oklahoma. So I think it's going to be an interesting game to see kind of the who's who on terms of Auburn's offense versus Oklahoma's defense, and then Oklahoma's offense versus Auburn's defense. But I'm just going to go with Auburn here. I think they can get it done. A little sneaky road victory for Jackson Arnold on his return to Norman.
The next game we're going to do is Illinois, Indiana. Perry, you've got this one.
Yeah, so quick shout out to two friends of our pod. We got Eli Yoakum, the Hudson Steeple, two fine Indiana alumni.
SAE.
This is another matchup of two undefeated Big Ten teams as they start conference play. Indiana has played a daunting three-game non-conference schedule that has included Old Dominion, Kennesaw State, and the home of Larry Bird, Indiana State. Illinois played Duke a couple weeks ago in what people thought might have been a closer game based on the spread, and it was not. Granted, Duke gave them every single opportunity possible to run that game up, and Illinois did. So when I look at this game, it's really tough to get a feel because neither team has really been tested, especially physically. But what I will say about Illinois is they have kind of struggled early on to get off to these fast starts, and in a pretty steady offense, I expect Indiana to come out flying, ready to play, airing the ball out early. What I really think the X factor of this game is going to be Altmeyer and how he's able to handle going into what I believe will be a pretty ruckus environment. This is a night game, the NBC Big Ten primetime game. So Indiana should have all day to tailgate, get the fans busting seats, packed house. And through three games, Altmeyer has zero turnovers. And last year, he only had six interceptions last season. So I'm looking at the Indiana defense here, and if they're going to be able to take the ball away from Altmeyer a couple times, I think that will be a huge factor of this game. But when I look to pick this game, I'm looking at what team has a more balanced offense, and that's going to be Indiana. They're top five in rushing. Well, I mean, it's kind of hard to give some substance to that based on who they played. They've still really handled the ball well on the ground. But I'm going to take Indiana here. The line's been moving around all week. I think it's around 5.5 right now. What I will say is I expect this to be a surprising shootout in Bloomington. But give me a Kurt Cignetti win, and we'll have two playoff hopeful teams, both obviously because of their schedules. But let's see Indiana continue the juice from last year and get a nice home win here in week four.
Yeah, I'll echo what Sam said there. Kind of hard to get a feel for this one. One thing that stood out to me about Illinois in that Duke game was their inability to run the ball against the Duke front. They ran it for 2.9 yards a carry in that game. They also allowed four sacks and 10 TFLs. It's a pretty good Duke front, but I think that being able to handle a team like that who maybe is just a middle of the pack ACC team, being able to handle a front like that should be within the realm of possibility for an Illinois team that hopes to compete in the Big Ten and make the playoffs. So that stood out to me as potentially an issue offensively for Illinois. And Indiana, other side of the coin, really haven't played anyone yet. A few cupcake games, like Sam mentioned. So it's hard to get a feel, but I'll be looking out for that Illinois front, see if they're able to establish the run better and protect Altmeyer, give him some time. But like Sam said, hard to get a good feel, but I'll give the benefit of the doubt to Kurt Cignetti here, and I think Indiana's going to take it in a close one.
Yeah, Frank Cignetti Jr. is my offensive coordinator at IUP. So I'm going to take the Cignetti family, Kurt Cignetti, who also coached, he was the head coach at IUP and a head coach at Elon in his time. So you just got to think He gets it done. I actually do like Fernando Mendoza on a serious note. If you watch some of the games he played at Cal, he was a pretty special quarterback. I think he was one of the most highly touted quarterbacks in this portal class. I think people are going to see that after they watch this game against Illinois. And not that I think Altmaier's that bad. I just think the ceiling of Fernando Mendoza is NFL level, NFL caliber play, high level NFL caliber play at his ceiling. So if we get that, and Indiana can run the ball, which they consistently have been able to do under Kurt Cignetti and all of Cignetti's JMU teams, I think we see an Indiana win. Also, I can never go against Eli Yoakum and Hudson Siebel, so we're gonna ride for those guys.
Yeah, I'm gonna echo here. I'm in full agreement that I think Indiana is actually better than they were last year. They didn't really lose that much returning production, or they didn't lose that much production, and they returned a decent amount. And they also returned or got Fernando Mendoza, which Chuck just mentioned, which is miles better in as an offense in a fit than for them this year than they were for Cordis Rourke last year. And he was also playing with like three injuries. Fernando Mendoza 100% healthy. I think Illinois' kind of perception they were seemed much higher than they were because people thought that Duke was going to be good this year, and you saw Tulane run all over them, and Duke looked pretty sad. So I think that the Illinois perception is a little inflated, and I think Indiana is better than they were last year. Like I said, they're going to get them done, and I think Cignetti's going to want to smoke them. I think he's going to want to kill them because this has been the team of the new Indiana is what they called Illinois all offseason. I think Cignetti's going to want to smoke them through the filter, Sig. Let's go. I
That's
love that. I love
a,
that.
I also think it's important to mention that Duke turned it over 5 times in the Illinois game, so the final score was a lot more skewed than
Oh yeah,
the level of play was.
absolutely.
Well,
But
after
I'll
the oh, what were you saying, Duskin?
no, I'm just saying I love the smoke through the filter.
That's
That's
great.
so good.
That's so good. All the Sig jokes are awesome. Now with that, we're going to a different Big Ten matchup, kind of similar in styles of play. We've got Michigan at Nebraska. The line opened up on Monday, Nebraska -1.5. It's now at Michigan -2.5. So almost a 4-point swing in just 2 days, signaling how like uncertain and intriguing this matchup is. One of the biggest storylines is Sherrone Moore won't be involved with any team activities this week. He's not allowed at meetings, no presence, no sideline voice. All of that is gone. And former hedge fund manager of Samuel James Limited turned football coach Biff Poggi will step in to guide the Wolverines. Michigan fans, we've seen this movie before. When Harbaugh was sidelined in 2023 due to the scandal that ended up being the Connor Stallions scandal, the program did run smoothly. So they proved before that this can work. So I'm gonna choose to believe them in that front. So I don't think that's gonna be that big of a problem. But it is gonna be weird seeing Biff Poggi, hedge fund manager, on the sideline. Another storyline this game offers is five star versus five star. So we have a five star versus five star quarterback showdown. We got Michigan's Bryce Underwood, who's coming off of a rocky road start against Oklahoma, where he didn't throw the ball for over 100 yards. But in his second big road start, I'd like to see a little bit of improvement. And I do believe there's going to be some improvement. Nebraska's Dylan Raiola has been electric. He's thrown for over 1,000 yards, 9 touchdowns, and no picks, although he could have thrown a couple picks in that Cincinnati game that just did not get picked off. But either way, no picks. Now, a lot of that came against Houston Baptist and Akron. So, weigh how good their statistics are. The Cincinnati game that Nebraska played did expose a couple of issues, because they barely eclipsed 100 yards rushing, and they're going to need to do a lot more than that against a really stout Michigan front, spearheaded by linebacker Ernest Hausman, number 15, who already leads the team with 20 tackles. Both statistical profiles are kind of skewed because of cupcake opponents, but Nebraska is averaging almost 50 points a game, and they have a 62% third down conversion rate, which are both top 10 in the country. While Michigan has quietly leaned on its run game, which is top 15 in the country, averaging 242 rushing yards a game, and the most impressive stat, 12 rushing touchdowns. In my opinion, this kind of seems like it's a who blinks first type of game. So what I mean by that is Nebraska is going to rely heavily on the passing attack and Dylan Raiola, and Michigan would like none other than the game to be trench warfare. So one team wants to run the 400-meter dash, one team literally wants to swim 14 miles. If the predictive stat I think could be which quarterback turns the ball over more. If you told me which quarterback turns the ball over more, I would probably tell you the winner of the game is the other team. My lean is that Michigan's defense is built to force Nebraska into the third and long situations. Just kind of how Duska was talking about how Oklahoma's defense might be forcing Auburn to be inefficient on first and second down. I think Michigan's defense could do the exact same thing to Nebraska. This should be a physical war, but give me the Wolverines to win and to cover.
Yeah, I mean, I hope you don't like points here, fellas, because I don't expect there to be much of it in this one. I think this is arguably a top three, if not top two, most intriguing game of the day, just because of the implications down the road for both these teams. This is a huge turning point type of game for both of these teams. If you just look ahead, Nebraska after Michigan, they have Michigan State, Maryland, Minnesota, Northwestern, and then they play USC at home. So if they win, if they can win this game, they hit the ground running. That being said, Michigan, another turning point game for them. They have a nice stretch ahead of them as well. So I also said last week or 2 weeks ago that I think that this Oklahoma game is going to pay dividends for Underwood because it was going to be the toughest, most likely the toughest, if not the toughest, environment and defense he'll play until Ohio State. But I just have a weird feeling that Nebraska is just going to eke this one out behind in what could be their biggest home game in the past few years. I'm going to take Nebraska here to get the outright win at home and just an awesome Big Ten 17-13 clash.
One thing we do have to mention, because everybody and their mom's mentioning it is the Bussin' Bowl. If you were unfamiliar with Bussin' with the Boys, I know one of our listeners is a diehard, so I
Going to
just
be
wanted to
fired up by that comment.
just gotta throw that out there.
Yeah, I don't think this game honestly will be as close as it looks to be on paper. This Michigan team, they kind of feel like my baby. I'm just trying to push them along, support them in their path to playoff contention. But like I was saying, Nebraska ground game defense, Cincinnati Bearcats, Brendan Sorsby, they had their way with Nebraska on the ground. And what's the name of Michigan's game? It's to run the piss out of the ball. So I think that they have a lot of success there. There's going to be a lot more opportunity for Bryce Underwood to escape and make plays with his legs, kind of get engaged in that way before he's forced to throw the ball. That those opportunities weren't there as much against Oklahoma. This Nebraska defense is not even close to that level of that Oklahoma defense. So I think that's going to make things a little bit easier for Bryce in the passing game, and look out for them to explode on the ground. Justice Haynes, Bryce Underwood, probably going to put up some big numbers if things go the way I see it. And I'll take the Wolverines here by over two scores.
Ooh.
Yeah, I'm gonna be going with I think the Wolverines are gonna get it done here in Lincoln. Chuck mentioned the fact that Sharon Moore is not gonna be on the sideline for Michigan and not gonna be involved with team activities. Good. Probably better for him this week. You saw what their offense could do whenever they. I feel like Sharon Moore is kind of trying to coddle their quarterback Bryce Underwood because obviously he's a true freshman. But you kind of saw the offense get unleashed, more vertical passing. More creativity with Biff Poggi at the helm last week. And I expect that to kind of translate to a Nebraska team that their defense did not look all that impressed with me versus Cincinnati. If Cincinnati's quarterback could complete the forward pass, we'd probably be talking about a Nebraska team with a loss here. I'm going to go against what Sam said, though. I think this game will sneakily have more points than you think because I think Michigan will be able to hit so many explosive runs to be able to open up their passing game and get some more scores. So I'm going to go with Michigan here. And I think like Dusty said, I think they're going to be pulling away late. And I could see this being a two score game at the end.
I like that, Arch. I like it a lot. The next game we're going to move on to, we're actually going to go from the Big Ten down south to the Big 12. But we've got Baylor versus Arizona State. It is at Baylor. My boss in the finance and economics department at the Eberly School of Business is going to be boots on ground. Her daughter is in the Baylor marching band. Thought that would be a little nugget.
Nice.
So the pod is
Respect.
everywhere. Friend of the pod. We'll be boots on the ground. But these are two programs sitting at fifth and sixth in the Big 12 odds. This game means a whole hell of a lot for both programs. Both are sitting at 2-1, and they could really use this win. Both teams have tested themselves against SEC opponents and came up short. Baylor fell to Auburn, while Arizona State lost a heartbreaker to Mississippi State. We've talked about both those games. Baylor quarterback Sawyer Robertson has been the sharper of the two quarterbacks this season thus far, nearly doubling Sam Levitt in both yards and touchdowns while throwing just two interceptions compared to Levitt's three. Arizona State, on the other hand, has leaned heavily onto its top 20 rushing attack, powered by a 1-2 punch of Relique Brown and Kanye Udoh, the Army transfer. The backfield produced over 200 yards against an SEC front, which may cause fits for this Big 12 front that Auburn kind of ran the rock out of. Jordan Tyson, though, Arizona State's leading receiver, he might be the best receiver in the country we've seen thus far. But beyond him, no other Sun Devil has 100 yards receiving this season. So it's kind of a one-trick pony in the pass game. Maybe that could be why, for some of the reason that Sam Levitt has struggled. Baylor, on the other hand, has a great passing attack with, I think they have six different receivers over 100 yards and 10 receptions, which is pretty cool. But they only have one back with over 300 yards, and then everybody else from there, his name is Bryson Washington. Everybody else from there, they've not been very productive in the ground. But these defenses, both are respectable. I do think Arizona State's defense is slightly better. Arizona State is the 27th ranked rush defense in the country. They've also been more reliably situationally. They're 33rd in the country on third downs. Baylor's defense hangs its hat on it's pass defense, which early in the year people thought, maybe that might be a huge problem. They're actually 34th in pass yards allowed, but they are 115th against the run, which plays right into what Arizona State probably wants to do, which is get their two backs going downhill. That's what they did against Mississippi State to claw their way back in the game and take the lead. I foresee them doing the exact same thing for this game. Baylor's overall run defense is also 80. Overall defense is just 84th in the country. So, or their rushing attack is 84th in the country. I don't know if they're going to be able to run the ball on Arizona State like Arizona State is going to be able to run the ball against them. I like both these head coaches. Dave Aranda, he has a steady hand, good defensive play caller, and you got Kenny Dillingham, who is full of energy. I really like his enthusiasm, but this matchup kind of feels like strength versus weaknesses. Baylor's run defense has holes, and Arizona State has the exact personnel to exploit it. If Levitt can simply manage the game and not turn the ball over, I like the Sun Devils to go down to Waco, Texas, and pick up a massive road upset. But I do think Sawyer Robertson might have something to say about that. Watch out for an instant classic. This game, I think, is like a one-score game. I think it could be something like Arizona State 31, Baylor 28 type of game where, we see a game-winning field goal. I'm all in on this watch.
Couldn't have said it much better myself. I think a big story in that Mississippi State game was how poor Sam Levitt played. He looked pretty flaky and out of rhythm the entire game. But the fact that Arizona State was able to respond in that second half and do what they did on the ground, I think that should give them a lot of confidence that they can, if things aren't going their way, they can rely on this ground game and make things a little easier on Sam Levitt. But at the same time, I still think Sam Levitt's a pretty elite college quarterback and think he'll have a good bounce back game here. I'm going to take Arizona State in this one.
For the record, I really agree with that, Dusty, because I think Sam Levitt could sneaky be a first round quarterback in the NFL this year. Now he's done nothing to prove my point so far, but last year he really had a good season, and I think this could be a huge get right spot for him.
Yeah, find me a team that Vegas loves more than Baylor. Baylor favored in this one, which is a little bit surprising. But I think this is one of, again, similar to Michigan, Nebraska, it's going to be another awesome, underrated game this week. A huge game with Big 12 championship implications. Granted, both teams have non-con SEC losses. But yes, give me Arizona State and Sam Levitt to pull this one out in Waco. And another, like you said, Charlie, just an instant classic. I'm going to take what I believe will be the more talented quarterback in this game, and Sam Levitt. A little bit more talent overall in Arizona State to exploit some of Baylor's defensive weaknesses like Auburn was able to do in the run game and pull it out.
I see that shit-eating grin. I wonder what Arch has to say.
Well, yeah, I mean, if I'm gonna match up and be consistent with my preseason Big 12 prediction, I had Utah versus Baylor. So I feel like since I already picked Utah, I have to go with Baylor. I feel very uncom. I would feel a lot better about this if Arizona State had actually beaten Mississippi State, because I think that that would have shown that. I think it would have. I don't know what it would show, but I would just have a better feeling about it if it was a Baylor. And it's also weird to me, like Sam mentioned, that Baylor is going to be favored in this. But I do think that Baylor is going to have some success throwing the ball. Blake Chapin had a pretty good game versus them. Arizona State secondary is definitely not as great as I think it was last year. But also last year, their secondary wasn't all that good anyway. I do think that this is going to be an interesting game because Baylor's defense looked horrendous versus Auburn. And I think that Arizona State is going to be able to run the ball really well on them. And I think that's going to open up Sam Levitt and Jordan Tyson and the other weapons to get going. But I just think Baylor has more offensive firepower. And from what I've seen so far this year, and I'm not factoring in last season, I think I would take Sawyer Robertson over Sam Levitt right now. And I think that Sawyer Robertson is in a much better groove. And I think he's going to push Baylor to a victory at home and guide himself to the first step of going to the Big 12 title game to lose to Utah, unfortunately. But.
Very nice, Arch. Very nice. Yeah, I think Sawyer Robertson's he's been the better quarterback this year. Like not a crazy thing to say. You're right.
I don't think it's necessarily close, but it's also like I think Levitt's played a harder-ish, I don't know, schedule,
I mean,
but
he just played worse. The Sawyer
yeah.
Robertson has balled out. He profiles very well. Now we're gonna move into a game where the away team might not profile as well. This is the South Carolina Gamecocks going to the Missouri, going to the other Columbia, the fake ass Columbia, and trying to get a win without Sellers, which could string massive problems. We never know. We never know.
We have our ears to the ground in Columbia, South Carolina. There are rumors from my sources that Sellers has been practicing and he will be good to go by Saturday. For those not familiar with the NCAA concussion protocol, think of when you used to play baseball and there would be a lightning strike. You'd have to wait 45 minutes till after that. It's the same with concussions, essentially. Once you are symptom-free, it's 7 days after your last symptom. So I believe that Sellers was symptom-free on Sunday and was able to go through practice on Tuesday. And all
Symptom free.
eyes are, yeah, symptom-free. Oh, it seems that he's going to be able to go Saturday, but do not expect a full report on him to come out till a little bit before the game. Because for those that don't remember last year, Drinkwitz did something very similar with Brady Cook, and all week it seemed like he was not going to play. And then about 30 minutes before the game, he trotted out as their starter. So I expect Beamer to do something similar and have a little bit of gamesmanship there. But it seems like Doni will be the guy if Sellers can't go. That seems to be one of the main stories of this game. But anyway, let's get into what I think are going to be some of the keys of the game. The first, I think, is going to be the turnover differential. Can South Carolina find a way to make a splash play on defense, especially if Sellers is not able to go? Is that defense going to be able to make a big sack on like the 35 to knock them out of field goal range? Will they get a strip sack on Bo, a fourth down stop on fourth and one? Something that'll just turn this game on its head, especially early, and keep this game close down the stretch. The second key to the game is going to be Ahmad Hardy. And all signs are pointing to him having his way against the South Carolina front that has not shown much life through three games. And he has had 460 rushing yards through three games. So you do the math, it's around 180 per game. So South Carolina's offense, or defensive line, is really going to have to take a step up. Their offensive line, South Carolina's, is going to have to take a step up because regardless if Sellers is able to go or not, you have to establish some sort of run game, whether it's through Sellers or through Faison and Attaway. and the rest of the committee. So that all being said, I expect a Beamer spot, like I said last week. I expect this team to be motivated all week to hear the media outcry. I expect play calling to take a step up and South Carolina to find a way to muck this game up and escape Columbia, Missouri. And the season will be back on. That is
Art, you
all.
got something to say about that?
I mean, I'm all for the homers, and I'd do the same thing if Georgia was a 13-point underdog, but Georgia will never be a 13-point underdog anymore. I think just the way this game profiles, I think you're seeing a South Carolina team that is a lot worse than people thought. Granted, through 3 weeks, 3 weeks, so a lot of time, there's 9 more weeks this season for people to be right on their predictions. And so I think you're seeing a South Carolina team that's a lot worse than people thought. I think you're seeing that a Missouri team that is so much better than what people would give them credit for. Missouri last year was kind of broken with Brady Cook. Their offense wasn't that great. And I think that's kind of influenced the way people perceive Missouri. I just think Missouri is going to be the much better team here. I think that South Carolina will have the edge defensive line, but I think one of the standout players in this game, I think, is going to be Damon Wilson, Missouri's edge. He's a Georgia transfer. Horrendous loss for Georgia. I was really sad when he left. He's going to be able to, if Sellers plays, he's going to be their spy. He's going to be their do-it-all guy, but he's also going to be able to rush the passer and get after you. I think Ahmad Hardy is going to have his way, and I think Bo Prabhula is going to open up the quarterback rushing attack like Pavia was able to do last week. And I think Prabhula is going to be able to take I think Missouri's weapons are better than Vanderbilt's, and what you saw what they did to South Carolina, no offense. So I just think the South or Missouri is going to have some success, and I think they're going to pull away here. I'm not confident on how large it is because these are the exact spots where South Carolina shows up. When their back's to the wall and does something about it. But I do think Missouri's going to get a win here.
This game's not going on the pick 'em, so I'm going SC. I'm riding with you. If we come on the pod on Monday, I want to be able to celebrate.
The line is moving down.
Yeah, I was always pretty impressed with Bo Prabhula when he would come in and in garbage time spots for Penn State. Thought honestly at points he offered a little more to that offense than Drew Aller did. But obviously Penn State sided with Aller. Prabhula made his way down to Columbia, Missouri. They've been pretty impressive so far. He played really well in that Kansas game. I think this South Carolina team, even if Lenoris plays, they'll still be a bit limited offensively. And I don't know how willing he's going to be playing in a football game. I don't think he's going to be thinking about his concussion if he decides to scramble on a play. I don't even want to say that. But still, I think the South Carolina offense might be a little limited, even if Lenoris plays. I'm going to echo Arch here and take Missouri.
People in like there's some people that are like really in at Penn State that were always that would always question them not giving Prabhula more of a chance. Remember Krause, Connor Krause, if you ever listen to this, Krause would always say that Prabhula was more of a baller than Aller was.
He's dynamic. Like Aller.
JT Daniels or Stetson Bennett though? Old age old question.
Obviously, JT Daniels. Yeah.
For the
Right, Arch?
audience, I will say that was me and Arch got into the very intense screaming match over Stetson versus JT.
Who came out on top of that?
Well, revision. I mean,
Don't know. Well, JT Daniels got a degree from Rice. Who really won?
yeah.
Are you devaluing the University of Georgia degree?
No,
Compared to
but Stetson never received his diploma and walked, so because he never graduated. So. Unfortunately, he's not a
Did he
UGA.
really not graduate?
Nope.
Are you serious?
He was at Georgia, went to a
That's got
community
to be
college, and back to
almost
Georgia.
impossible.
I thought he's like a fifth
Well,
year.
dude, his like he'll probably never listen to this. His major was downtown Athens every day. I know
Yeah, I
from
bet.
he was there every day. He was there
Okay,
like a ton.
still.
Yeah,
Baller.
but it. Yeah,
Wasn't
hey.
he a fifth year
Yeah,
too?
that's what I said.
Fifth or
Right?
sixth year. Yeah.
He didn't finish
21 soon.
undergrad.
He won two. No, he
Congrats.
didn't. He didn't. I think, dude, because 2 years he went to Jones Community College in Mississippi. I
Some of
think
those
to one of
credits
two
had to have
years. I
transferred.
don't know.
Dude, UGA might be
Dude,
stingy. And he.
UGA peed on my Elon transcript and said, like, none of those
True.
transfers. So.
He was still there for a total of 4 years, though. And
Oh,
guys graduated from
absolutely.
there in like 2.5 years. Like, Right?
Well, yeah. Well, like I said, his major was downtown Athens, and his minor was football, so it didn't really.
Downtown Athens, good time.
Yeah.
Can't blame him.
Yeah.
No. That is
One year
true.
ago today, Arch, you were in downtown Athens.
Yeah. Horse and carriage.
That's awesome. Hey, quickly, we are going to get Duska's thoughts on a Florida Miami game. A Florida Miami game that is only a 7.5 point line. Am I right about that?
Yes.
7.5 point line. It can Florida get frisky?
Yeah, so I don't think it's really necessary to talk a lot about matchups in this game here. Billy Napier might be coaching for his job at Hard Rock Stadium on Saturday night. Unfortunately for Billy, it's going to come against a team that's looked like a top five team through the first 3 weeks. They have weapons on both sides of the ball. It's been two tough games in a row for Florida. I still think they're going to come out with some juice. The defense came out with a lot of juice against LSU. Unfortunately, DJ Lagway decided to turn it over five times, so kind of fizzled out a little bit. But the defense has kept them in game so far. And honestly, I could even see Lagway and the offense coming out a little hot, looking to respond to some of the adversity they faced last week, maybe even putting one or two touchdowns on the board early. I'm looking to see them rely more on the ground game. They've ran it pretty effectively behind a strong offensive line. Jaden Ball has been probably the only bright spot on the Florida offense. And I don't know if they've utilized him enough through 3 weeks. And I think Florida, and another important aspect, is going to see if they can utilize Lagway's legs a little more, get him involved in the game in that way, and kind of put a little less pressure on the forward pass for him, because that's probably what he needs at this point. But even if Florida comes out hot, I think this Miami defense is good enough to respond. They have two NFL edges, Akeem Mezidor and Reuben Bain, who absolutely gave it to Notre Dame in that opening game. The offense, Carson Beck, they have probably the best offensive line in the country, and their weapons offensively. I think they're all a little too seasoned to not be able to answer scores from Florida and hang around until they're able to land a couple haymakers of their own and put this game away. So I think Florida, they're going to be able to keep it close, but Miami's going to be able to respond to any adversity just because of the experience they have on this roster. So even if it's a high scoring shootout or a trenches defensive slugfest, I still like Mario Cristobal and the Hurricanes to come out on top of either of those situations. But I think Florida potentially covers here.
The one thing you mentioned, Dusko, is DJ Lagway using his legs. And the one football thing about quarterback and being able to run the ball as a quarterback is when you're young, it buys you time. It buys you time to really learn the offense to be a good decision maker because there's going to be times where you can just get schemed up for an 8 yard QB draw or schemed up for QB power or when all hell breaks loose, like just escape the pocket and try to make a play. So I'd like to see them kind of lean into that a little bit more, and maybe this was an egregious mistake of the coaching staff, kind of overvaluing how good DJ Lagway was at reading the field and like operating the offense. So that should have been a very eye-opening experience during in that LSU game to be like, hey, maybe DJ's not where we need him to be, but where we think he is. But that doesn't mean we can't make him effective. So I'd like to see them utilize the for A, just the running back and running the football, and then B, a little bit more Lagway's legs.
The other running back.
Yes, the other running back on the use the two running backs you have in the backfield, please. But I do think Carson Beck, he's a really good quarterback, maybe the best in college football we've seen thus far, and that does not bode well for a Florida team that is desperate. Like, oh, I guess the team desperate, Billy Napier even more desperate. He needs this win like oxygen. And if Florida wants to make a bowl, like they need to get one of these. They need to get one of these soon.
Yeah, I mean, the second week in a row, the national audience gets to see Florida on the primetime ABC slot, which will be interesting. Secondly, this game being College Game Day is an abomination in itself. Except I didn't realize that the Utah game started at 10 a.m., so that changed a lot of things. But that being said, I will be going right back to the well like I did last week. I think I just another one of those like weird feelings. Miami profiles better. They have the common opponent. They've been playing amazing. They're a top five team. They have arguably the best resume in college football up to this point. But I just think Florida in this wounded animal mode and this spread that again should be a little bit higher, Lagway facing all the adversity and the memes and everyone shitting on them. Give me Florida plus the points and outright.
Yeah, I'm gonna echo some of Sam's sentiment there. I don't know if I could truly see Florida winning this football game. It wouldn't shock me, but I don't know if I can predict it another week. I'm gonna say they keep it close here. One funny comment I did see about this game from the Cover Three podcast that I watched. Somebody commented because Billy Napier, known bonehead, Mario Cristobal, known dumb decision maker in important moments of the game, and the comment was, how many months would it take Napier and Cristobal to get out of an escape room? And I think that is going to be the perfect encapsulation of this game. What coach is going to do less dumb things that make your team lose? Florida last week, luckily for Napier, he didn't really have to make any dumb decisions. His quarterback did it all for him. But this week, I think he's going to put more emphasis on himself and the actual offense as a whole. So I just think it's going to be what coach. I think it's going to be what coach is able to do less dumb things and put their team in more smart situations. And I don't necessarily feel good about Florida's staff compared to Miami's, but like Sam said, this line, just the feeling, just the overall vibe of Florida. If not now, then at when? And I said that last week, and they proceeded to do that. So maybe if you say it again, they'll change their tune. But I'm going to go with Florida to keep it close here. I think Miami's going to squeak it out, though, from the veteran leadership of known Georgia legend Carson Beck.
All right. Which quarterback is the anti-terrorism gun? Basically, what you're saying, Arch.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Sweet. And the mic is actually going to go right back to you, Caleb Arch, because you are going to preview a late night 11 p.m. kick, Michigan State at the Coliseum.
Yeah, this game is going to be pretty funny. This is going to be USC's first test after just beating up on the deaf, blind, and poor.
Well, besides the Georgia Southern's middle linebacker
That's
had
true. Brandon
11
Tyson,
tackles against them.
known Elon teammate. Yeah, he balled out. Unfortunately, Georgia Southern surrounding him is pretty bad this year. In a sense of compared to USC, no idea what they're going to do in the Sun Belt. Probably not anything good. Michigan State here. You got Aiden Childs. It's going to be a second year in the system with Jonathan Smith. A lot of returning pieces on defense and returning pieces on offense. It's a pretty tough matchup to kind of predict because Michigan State has played the likes of not anybody special. They put their best team they played was Boston College, and Boston College probably should have beat them. Boston College's quarterback and offense also had a field day against them. And but I think the Boston College's quarterback is going to be worse than Maeva here, and I think USC's weapons are going to be better than Boston College's, obviously. So I think that USC is going to be able to score at will on Michigan State secondary. That's analytics-wise and PFF grades are pretty poor in the country. They were in the lower half before. They were in actually the 120s before the BC game. Probably got a little better since then, but still not going to be anything special. But on the other side, I think Michigan State's going to be able to take advantage of USC defense. It really hasn't seen the speed that Michigan State's going to be presented with them. And I think Childs is pretty dynamic. He's due for a few whoopsie daisies every game where you're like, what in the world? But I don't think that he's going to be able to, I don't think those are going to be as costly here. And I think they're actually going to be able to score on USC. I think this is going to be like an overfetched late night dream. I think there's going to be a lot of points here. I think USC is going to edge them out because I think their talent profile is better. But I also think that Michigan State is going to be their first real test this year. So I think it's going to be a little shock to their system. I do not would not be surprised if Michigan State got out to a little lead here. Problem is that Michigan State is going to be traveling two or three time zones over. It's going to be a late kick their time. I believe it's a like a 10 or 11. So it's going to be tough to see how they respond to that body clock when they travel. I mean, this is getting in the weeds here, but when do they go to LA? Like, how do they get acclimated? Is going to kind of determine how they start this game, but I think they got a chance to keep it close here.
Yeah, my favorite receiver in the country plays for USC, and I think His name is Mekhi Lemon. He's number six. He plays out of the slot a lot. Polynesian kid. He's wonderful. He's got great body control. He catches the football well. He runs incredible routes, especially outside of the slot. Man covers, he'll torch you. He runs a great box fade, can go up and get the football. And then they also pair Mekhi Lemon with Jacoby Lane, who, if you don't know Jacoby Lane, he's a 6'4". He's number eight. He's a 6'4", true X receiver, and he makes some of the most incredible catches you will ever see. He's got sticky hands. His route running is a little bit unpolished, but I do think this USC offense has a chance. Like we say a lot about Lincoln Riley offenses, this offense has got a chance to be super special with Maiva at the helm. I like USC to win this game, but I do like Michigan State to cover. And this is going to be a late night bar watch. It should be fun. I saw this on the slate and thought this will be fun.
Yeah, I agree, Charlie. This will be fun. Not many sober eyes watching this game.
No.
I'm not going to dive too much into this.
Couple
I'm going
icy
to take
mangoes.
USC here. USC here minus the points. I just think their offense is going to be a little bit too much. I will echo Arch's over. I think this will be a points extravaganza and what gives some type of Pac-12 after dark vibes, but I'll take USC.
Yeah, I don't have a ton on this one either. It's gonna be a fun watch on the bus home from Johnson City late on Saturday night. I'll take USC as well.
Which moves us right into the Superdog segment. Arch, why don't you start us off?
Well, my theme this year on the podcast has been kind of to fade Vanderbilt. But unfortunately, that really hasn't gone as well. So why not do it again? Taking Georgia State here. TJ Finley, known veteran, been around the block about six different schools, enrolled at Georgia State
Do you
about
think
2 weeks ago and suited up.
TJ Finley, do you think he'll get an undergrad degree?
Absolutely not.
I mean, his academic advisors probably work until midnight every night to work out the transfer credits. But I think that he is not. If you're able to revitalize some of the stuff he had at Texas State about 2 years ago with G.J. Kinney, with Georgia State, their coaching staff's fine. A lot of ex-Georgia guys there. Their head coach is an ex-Georgia coach.
Is Coach Banks there?
Thanks.
Remember the old Elon DB coach?
Oh my God.
Remember he was like this,
He might be
right?
Coach
I think he might be.
Arkita, Coach Arkita Banks.
Yeah, Arkita Banks. Let's look that up.
I got you.
Arkita Banks.
No, he's at ECU.
Ah, oh, okay. Never mind.
Yeah. He's a senior defensive analyst at ECU.
Georgia State's got a good receiver named Ted Hurst, which I think he's going to be a dynamic playmaker here. And it's 27 and a half. People are going to say, oh, Georgia State beat them last year. Vanderbilt's going to come out hot and try and kill them. You can't kill a Panther. You just can't. So they're going to come out. They're going to keep it close. And I'm looking forward to a good game.
Quick nugget. TJ Finley is an official graduate of Auburn University.
Oh,
How about
nice.
that? Good for him.
Good on
Nice.
him. That's awesome.
That's
That's
probably the best
awesome.
school he's been to out of all of them.
Yeah,
So
dude,
good for
what a
him. Job.
good degree. Sam, do you want to do your super dog?
I will. Yeah, just looking at the board, up and down
If
the
you're
board.
also wait before we do this, I'd like the audience, if you're watching, to just take a wild guess on Sam's super dog.
Close
Take
your
just
eyes.
take 5 seconds. One, two, three, four, and go, Sam.
No further analysis.
I like it. I like rolling with your guns. I guess I'll go. I took Michigan State. I t it was 15 and a half. It's now 18 and a half. I'll take the points gladly. But this is the first legit defense that USC has played besides Brennan Tyson, as we've already mentioned. I want this to just be an interesting late night bar watch, and because I want that to happen, I'm going to predict it to happen. I do
Well, if you
think
want it to happen, it will. So we know the rules around here.
exactly. We know the rules around here. And I do think this would be fun. The bar around here serves icy light mango on draft, and I'd like to have one in my hand and watch a close football game.
And I'll take us home here. I think it would be unnatural for Georgia Tech to not overlook Casey Keeler and the Temple Owls after their biggest win in the Brent Key era. I think the Temple Owls are going to find a way to muck things up with this Georgia Tech team. There's not much to be said about their offense or defense, but I just have confidence in Casey Keeler and their ability to muck things up here. I think they'll be able to sneak a couple of touchdowns on the road. They're 23.5 point underdogs. So,
Why does that seem kind of low?
the same
Because
as
it is.
Oklahoma. Yeah, doesn't that seem a little low?
Right?
No, but I get that, Dusko. That
Serious,
makes
obvious
no sense.
letdown spot for Georgia Tech, probably overlooking Temple, which, I mean, you can't really blame them for that, but they have an ACC schedule coming up. They have a lot of work to do in the in their conference this year. So I think the Owls find a way. Probably not going to win outright. Not a really good chance of that happening, but 23.5 points, I believe they could cover that. So I'm going to ride with the Temple Owls here.
Yeah, I'm gonna echo off that for just 1 second. I think they're doing the same thing that me and Dusk were talking about last week with West Virginia losing to Ohio on purpose, might I add. They did that on purpose. I think Temple got beat like a drum by Oklahoma. So the Georgia Tech, after a huge win versus Clemson, it's like, oh, Oklahoma killed them. Can
Not
you
so
really?
fast. They're so
Yeah.
bad. Oklahoma killed him. Wait.
Yeah. Wait. So I think it'll be funny. I think it'll be funny.
Casey
I
Keeler,
think
known winner of a lot of football games.
that's true. I think it goes in Temple's favor as well. Haynes King just carried the ball about 30 times. I don't think they're going to carry it 30 more. Let's let him throw the ball, Georgia Tech, please.
Yeah, I mean, I think Casey Keeler might pull out all of the stops here. The playbook might be as wide open as one playbook could be,
Philly
which could.
Special is in the playbook this
That could
week.
be a huge thing. I'll tell you one thing. When I was playing for the Pinehurst Rams and we played a bad opponent on Wednesday and Thursday of that week, sometimes we'd sneak in a couple periods of the next week's opponent just to, a look ahead spot. That's what you think about. I don't know if you should be doing that against the Owls. This
Not
is an
so
Owls
fast.
podcast. This is an Owls podcast.
No doubt.
Yeah.
That might be
Oh,
the
no.
prevailing theme of this podcast, the Temple
Yeah.
Owls. Known appreciators.
Yes.
Who's the Temple quarterback?
Evan Simon.
He's horrendous. You should not look him up if you do not waste your time.
Threw like six touchdowns against UMass.
Well, yes, that was because
Well, one of
UMass was
the
the worst team in the FBS.
Evan Simon ball all over Atlanta on Saturday. Look out.
This is a Temple Owls podcast.
I love it. I love it. Duska,
Hootie hoo.
how many Temple games you think you've been to in your childhood?
Probably at least 20,
That's
15 to
awesome.
20. We used to, I mean, tickets were real cheap when I was younger. So my mom, nothing to do on a Saturday afternoon, she'd take me and Jack down to Lincoln Financial Field. We watched the Owls play. I remember very vividly first game I went to, they played Bucknell.
Oh.
Yeah, gave Bucknell a lot of fits that game. Good game for the Owls.
I sure hope so.
Sam, do you remember the Colgate game we watched at Navy on that trip we had?
No, they played Fordham.
Oh, it was Fordham. Dang it.
Was Fordham week
Great
one.
call.
He stayed in
Dude,
that
great
house with
call.
like two bathrooms.
Yes. I thought it was Colgate. That's a great call. Fordham.
Yeah. First
Same.
play of the game, Navy made force a fumble on the kickoff.
Yeah. I think we that was when Malcolm Perry came off the stands to
Oh, they
get
had to take him out because who your friend was playing quarterback?
Will Wirth.
The
Well,
white
Tago
kid?
Smith got hurt, and then Will Wirth comes
Yeah.
in. Yeah,
And then
you
Malcolm
got a
came out
picture
and
with
went
Will
out.
Wirth. And then actually, at the end of that year, Will Wirth take Navy
They
on a
beat
magic.
Houston.
Yeah, they t he takes Navy on a magical run, and then the run ends when he gets hurt in the first quarter against the Temple Owls in the AAC Championship game in 2016 versus the Matt Rhule Temple Owls. So, just nugget for the
What
audience.
should our trivia question be? All right, I got one. If you are still here and you've made it through pod one and pod one part two, and you're at the end, put in the comments, don't look it up, put it in the comments to five schools TJ Finley went to without looking it up.
Well, I kind of want to guess.
I think I know who they are. Can we talk about it here?
Well, we yeah, just pause the pod and then comment. But yeah,
Yeah.
I'd like
Oh,
to hear
I
your
had a
thoughts.
trivia
One of
question for
them
you guys
is
because I was thinking about this
Texas.
last night.
Oh, go ahead.
All right, quick trivia before we end. I saw a tweet last night and I like went a little rabbit hole. What do you think the highest viewed college football game of all time is?
Texas USC National Championship. Vince
Is
Young.
it that?
I think it'd be something more recent, right? No.
I'm gonna say it's I think it's Alabama Clemson when Clemson went on the Hunter Renfrow zig route.
That's good.
Oh no, it's Alabama Tennessee from 2022, isn't it?
I feel like it
Hampton
wouldn't.
Elon 23.
Hopefully, Hampton Elon 24. Hopefully, no one watched that.
Yeah, true, really
let's
true.
go. I mean, I'm gonna assume it's not. Let's go like Ohio State, Michigan from 22, 20, 23.
Charlie, it was USC, Texas. Number two was the Ohio State, Oregon Natty.
Oh, I remember, Sam, you remember watching that?
That doesn't make
Yeah,
sense.
the ski house.
Ski house, West Virginia.
Also, I just want to clarify one thing. It wasn't Temple Bucknell. Must have been a different orange color scheme. I was like 10 years old at the time. So, but I looked up the last time Temple played Bucknell. It was 2019. So it was definitely way before that. And then the last time before that was 1970. So I
Not
certainly
even.
wasn't, I certainly didn't attend that game.
So
So
who was it?
they probably played UTSA.
Campbell?
Sam Houston?
It was an orange team. I don't know. I
UTSA.
don't know. I'll have to do a little digging.
100%
Because
UTSA.
I don't even know what year it was. I know I
If
was just
they're
way
in the
young.
American, so it was probably UTSA.
Well,
That
UTSA wasn't in the
wasn't in the
American
American
then.
at that
Also,
point.
I don't think the American existed yet, so.
Was it like a Syracuse non-con game?
No, because they won. So they I don't yeah. They weren't beating Syracuse in like 2012, 2011.
Was it Orange or was it Garnett? It was probably South Carolina. Oh, back to TJ Finley. Does anybody have the list up?
I do.
Because I'm pretty. It's Oregon, Texas State, Auburn, Georgia State now, and Western
No,
Kentucky,
you're
right?
wrong. You
What?
started off wrong. He never went to Oregon.
Hey, Duska.
What?
Wait. Oh, I don't know. Wait, that might
Did
not
he
have
not
been.
go to Oregon? Oh no, I'm
No.
thinking of God, I'm thinking of Bobby Ashford. He went to Oregon.
Was gonna say Sam Houston.
Oh.
LSU, Auburn, Texas State, Western Kentucky, Tulane, and Georgia State.
Tulane doesn't even count because you didn't even, but yeah, no, that's what it was. Yeah.
All right.
LSU and then Auburn. I thought Ashford is the one who was at Oregon and then God knows where.
Well, everybody, thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Forward Pass Pod. It's been a fun time recapping week four. We will be back on Monday
Buckle up,
tomorrow.
guys. We
Probably
got big
on
one next week.
Tuesday because yeah, we've got a huge week of college football to re recap this week, and then next week, Penn State plays someone.
There's murmurs of a Ryder Cup read.
Ooh, yeah, there have been murmurs that there's gonna be a special Ryder Cup pod. Who knows
And
though?
there is rumors that one Big Ten team that's pretty good will be going down on the West Coast next week. I wonder who that is.
Somebody believes in the Nittany Lions.
Oh no.
I
No,
sure
a
hope
team
not.
is
Not so
a
fast, my
team is
friend.
a team from sorry, a team from the East Coast is getting beat on the West Coast next week.
Oh, is getting beat on the West
Oh,
Coast?
yep. I know exactly. Don't say it. I know what you're thinking.
There's rumors.
Oh, it is a Washington spot.
We will see if they come to fruition.
Hey,
I can
don't
either
spoil the
confirm or
dream.
deny those allegations.
Okay, sweet. Well, guys, thanks for listening. Fellas, thanks for doing the pod. This has been awesome.